Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Melvin Dumar and Gary Magnuson, and that song Fame is very appropriate. Fame and Infamy. Melvin, you're still there, right?
I'm still here.
Before we meet our other two guests, bring on the other member of your posse, I want to ask you, you know, you were beaten over the head, ridiculed. You became a punchline after the so-called Mormon will was tossed out. People made fun of you. You had to basically hide here and there. I'd like to know that since Gary's book came out, The Investigation, has it changed? Has it turned around that people look at you in a different way?
Well, in some respects, yes. There's a lot of people that talk to me now that I think were reluctant to even talk to me before. And I have a lot of people come up to me with different stories and information and everything. And, you know, where, you know, they wouldn't say anything 30 years ago, you know, a lot of people. So, yeah, it has changed somewhat.
Well, there's still a long way to go, but there's two guys who are working in your corner, trying to take it, push the ball over the gold line, so to speak. And one of them is Stuart Stein, an estate lawyer who practiced in Florida and most recently in New Mexico. Stuart, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And we're also joined by Ron Greening, who's an estate planning and estate administration lawyer based now in Austin. Ron, you're there.
I am.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here. Stuart, I want to start with you. How did you get hooked up with Gary and Melvin?
Well, the way it happened is that after Gary's book came out, I have a radio show that broadcasts out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, that had an emphasis on estate planning for many years. And I've always looked for a good guest to have on to talk about one facet or another about estate planning, and I wanted to have Gary and Melvin on the show to talk about the book, what Melvin's situation was. Basically, the lesson to my listeners was, don't do your own will. You better go to a lawyer and get it done right, and you wouldn't have anybody attacking a will in court. But when I read the book, and I was convinced, as Gary was, that Melvin was really cheated years ago. And so we did a two-part interview with Gary and with Melvin. And during the time before the show and after the show, the question came up, gee, Stuart, do you think there's a possibility that we can go back into court with this new information? So like I would do for any client when I get that question, I'll say, well, let me do a little research and see what I come up with. And based upon the new information that Gary got, including the very decisive testimony of Bob Darrow, the pilot, who was willing to testify as he told Gary that he flew Howard Hughes up to the Cottontail brothel, did not fly him back at the same time that Melvin found him, saved his life, and brought him back to Las Vegas. Since that was newly discovered evidence, I had to do the research to find out whether or not that information would give us the key to the courthouse. And as I did the research under Nevada law and under Utah law, they have, as most states have, a statute of limitations as to all actions you could bring in court. So when you look under fraud, the statute in both of those states say that you can bring an action based upon fraud. Upon your discovery of the fraud, you have to do it within 3 years. So since the article that Gary talked about appeared in the newspaper, where Bob Darrow called and got a hold of Melvin, and then Melvin told Darrow to call, put him in touch with Gary, that was less than 3 years before the interview on the radio. And so we did the research, and Melvin said, would you take the case? And I took the case. And
so how does that constitute fraud, though, Darrow coming forward and telling that story?
Well, that is the conclusive proof that all of the aides, when they testified that Howard Hughes never left the Desert Inn for all the years he lived in the penthouse, was a lie. It also coincides with them giving the threats to Mr. Forsyth, who was the person who delivered the will to Melvin. He didn't testify there. There was another witness who was spoke with the lawyers the night before who were representing Melvin, who when he showed up the next day was all beat up and he changed his whole testimony. And then all of these other issues that Gary found out about leads to the conclusion that there was what's called intrinsic fraud at the original trial, meaning that there was perjury and manipulation of the system by telling people how to testify and testify falsely. There was extrinsic fraud, which is fraud outside the court, where they stop people from testifying by threatening them. And by finding out that the truth was that Howard Hughes did leave the Desert Inn, that he did show up at the Cottontail brothel, that he left without the pilot, and that Melvin found him, now that's the linchpin of saying that there is a fraud.
Go ahead.
And the other background here is that this kind of fraud in the courts has been around in this country since the 1700s. There are cases from the Supreme Court of the United States saying that a federal judge has jurisdiction to take away the benefits of someone who obtained a judgment in state court by fraud. And that is the basis of why we brought this case in federal court in Salt Lake City, because the federal court there has jurisdiction against people who obtained a state court judgment by fraud and to take away the benefits that they got. And that's why when we brought the suit, we sued two people. We sued Bill Gay, who, as Gary was talking earlier, was the person who really controlled all of the Hughes matters for many, many years. He knew everything that was going on. Everything was reported to him. And we also sued William Rice Lummis, Bill Lummis. Bill Lummis was Howard Hughes' cousin. His mother was given another one-sixteenth or one-eighth. Melvin could correct me on this.
And William Lummis was given the same thing that I was supposed to get, one-sixteenth.
One-sixteenth. So here is a guy, and since you're in Las Vegas, I'll make a gambling analogy. If you're playing high spade in the hole or Chicago, and you have the ace of spades down in your first card, you know that you're going to get money at the end of the game. And so no matter what you bet, you don't have to worry about losing your money. We have now Bill Lummis, who was going to get a 1/16th. Yet what he did as a member of a very powerful Houston law firm, he ran to Delaware to take over the Summa Corporation, which was the holding company that Howard Hughes had there. And he was appointed by the Chancery Court in Delaware to take over everything that Howard Hughes had. So you had Bill Lummis and Bill Gay having to deal and work with each other.
Hold on a second. We need to take a short break. Ron Greening, I promise we're going to get to you and how you got involved in this right after we come back. Stay with us, everyone, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. Melvin Dumar is the working class regular guy who had an encounter with Howard Hughes out in the middle of the Nevada desert. Gary Magnuson is the former FBI agent who reopened the investigation of the so-called Mormon Will and has written about it in a book called The Investigation. Stuart Stein is the attorney who came to the rescue of these two guys and tried to help get them back in federal court. And Ron Greening is another attorney who lives in Lake Travis, Texas, near Austin, with his two chocolate labs and a pet longhorn steer. And he's going to join us now. Ron, how did you get involved with this crew?
Good morning, George. Well, it started with Stuart Stein, who I've known for many years as another estate planning attorney. And he asked me to investigate whether Bill Gay's sons, who had, well, let's back up a moment. Bill Gay, during this lawsuit against him, died. So the defendant died, against whom there was a claim. The two sons stepped up and said, members of Dad's estate, we will represent the estate. And we do represent the estate since we're executors. They never would come across with the documentation showing that, although they made multiple representations in court, in federal court. Stewart asked me to investigate, since Mr. Gay was a resident of Parris County, Texas, and that's where any probate would occur, and an executor only becomes an executor when a court appoints him. Just saying so in a will does not make one an executor. There was no probate of Bill Gay's will or his estate on record. After Stuart Stein presented that to the federal court, they said, well, we're not executors, but we represent the estate anyway. We needed a representative of the estate in order to proceed with the lawsuit in federal court. We asked the court in Harris County to open a probate. We did open a probate of Bill Gay's estate and asked for an independent administrator to be appointed. After some procedural delays, we subpoenaed the two brothers who had represented that they represented the estate formally, and subpoenaed them and asked them to show cause why they hadn't submitted the will to the court. They dodged process servers. We had a professional and a constable both trying to serve them and the widow. One of them did show up through a counsel, and at that hearing, the court appointed an independent administrator. They did not present the will at that hearing, but the next day they presented Bill Gay's will and also applied to become executors. The court in later hearings found them unfit to serve because they had lied multiple times in federal court saying that they represented the estate when they didn't.
So that's a little victory for you.
That is, indeed.
Or is it a big one? Is it big?
It's a pretty big one to get somebody to represent the estate so that the federal case can move forward. That isn't over yet. We are, in fact, tomorrow at 2 o'clock having another hearing in Harris County Court. We've had several. We'll have more. The Gay family is fighting tooth and nail to not disclose any of the Gay estate assets. And they have refused the requests of the independent administrator appointed by the court, who has not only the authority but the responsibility to gather the assets and distribute them according to the will. They will not give the independent administrator, Cliff Goodwin, any information whatsoever. They continue to make misrepresentations in the court, such as stating that the administrator doesn't need the information to file an estate tax return as required by federal law because one has already been filed. The independent administrator found out about 10 days ago that from the IRS that, in fact, an estate tax return has not been filed for Bill Gay. So there continue to be misrepresentations
By his lawyers, who are his sons. Ron, looking at a story here that was written by the Associated Press when Bill Gay died, and it quotes him. It says, before his death, Gay was outraged over being named in the lawsuit, declaring, "I don't have anything to do with it," according to his Salt Lake City attorney. And that attorney said, Melvin Dumar can't specify any wrongdoing by Gay. So you guys, Stuart Stein, Ron Greening, you're going after Bill Gay, but you don't really have any of his fingerprints on any of this, do you?
Well, here is really the issue. If the Gays want to put up a Enron defense, it's not going to work anymore. The top man who knows what's going on, who had the information and kept it secret, is responsible. And that's what we're talking about. You just can't say, well, I didn't know about it, when you had the right, you had the ability, and from everything that was known about the Howard Hughes operation, with all of the aides around him, that there were constant notes that were being taken about where he was and what Howard Hughes was doing. All of this information was given to the California headquarters where Bill Gay was running everything. And it would be very difficult for a jury to believe that after Bill Gay was the head aide for all of the Howard Hughes organization, all the aides around him, everybody reported to Bill Gay. He was the one effectively who was the chief operating officer of all of the Howard Hughes entities in Las Vegas and all over the world. For him not to know that Howard Hughes didn't come back from the brothel, that when Darrow flew back to Las Vegas and Eckersley wasn't there, and how and Darrow said that it was Eckersley who would call him up and saying, I'm coming over, and Howard wants to go to the brothel, Howard wants to go here or there, wherever they were going, that if Eckersley didn't call Bill Gay, then he never called anyone, and he just wouldn't not call anyone when the head man is gone.
I mean, Gary, I want to go to Gary Magnuson for a second. Gary, that this sort of goes to one of the other things that you uncovered in your investigation, that Bill Gay and some of the other folks should have known that Howard Hughes wasn't there at the time that Bob Darrow says he took him up to this brothel, because there was a distinct lack of activity where Hughes was supposed to be living, right?
That's correct. Normally, the aides lived at the Desert Inn. They each had a suite there, usually on the eighth floor, I believe. And they regularly made telephone calls through the switchboard and so on, and received meals, room service meals, on a regular basis. During that period of time that we're talking about, between generally Christmas and New Year's of 1967, there were no outgoing telephone calls from those suites, and there were no meals delivered to them in, for room service. So they must not have been there.
It's kind of a dead giveaway. And you think Gay should have known that?
He would absolutely have known it. We have many witnesses saying that the aides were in daily contact with Gay. He knew everything that was going on. And can you imagine Howard Hughes, the wealthiest man in America at the time, disappearing, and the aides would have kept that a secret from Gay? Absolutely not. He would have known. He would have known.
Tell me this, any of you who might be able to answer this, can you tell me about how Bill Gay became rich? What did he get out of the Howard Hughes empire, the estate? I don't know if you want to go as far as to suggest that he looted it, but do you have any indication of what he got from it?
Well, it is difficult because to really find out, because the family is keeping all of the information out of the probate, and that's why Ron Greening, who's one of the most prominent estate planning lawyers in Texas, leading the charge there, I know we're going to find out. But all I can do is quote a writer who once said that every major fortune was built on a criminal act. And if that be true today, then there are some secrets that have not yet come out that we have to find out about. All I do know, and from reading all of the books, and George, you know this probably better than I, living in Las Vegas, during the time that Howard Hughes was the owner of all of those casinos in Las Vegas, for some reason they all lost money. I don't know how that could happen unless somebody was taking money. And
yeah.
So you have to look at who was in control or who was in true control, as opposed to who may have been the owners of record.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back and fire this up again, we'll be talking with Melvin Dumark, Gary Magnuson, Ron Greening, Stuart Stein about where these cases go from here and whether Melvin Dumark is ever going to see any of Howard Hughes' money. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for staying up with us. We're talking with Melvin Dumark, Gary Magnuson, Stuart Stein, and Ron Greening about the Melvin versus Howard saga. Actually, it's not Melvin versus Howard. It's Melvin versus the Howard Hughes empire, the lawsuits that have just been renewed 32 years after Howard Hughes died and 30 years after his estate was basically carved up among 21 cousins and a whole bunch of other people. So the question is, what are they going after? What can they possibly get if the estate has already been carved up? And how can this still be fought in court after so many years? And when we come back, that'll be what our focus will be, where the case goes from here. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Coming up in about 25 minutes, we'll be opening up the phone lines and allow you to get involved in this discussion about Melvin Dumar, Howard Hughes, and the Hughes millions or billions, and what might happen to that estate or what's left of it. Ron Greening, I want to go back to you for a second. Now, I know that Stewart filed some legal actions in Utah, and I believe that the judge in Utah had ruled that he could go back to court here in Nevada. You're there in Texas pursuing something else. Help me understand where this battle, if everything goes how you guys want it to go, where this battle will be won and what the sequence of events would be.
The battle will be actually won in the federal court. The reason we're in state probate court in Texas is to get someone in charge, appointed by the court, in charge of Bill Gates' estate so that the federal case can proceed. Without a representative of the estate, the federal case cannot proceed. Or if it proceeded, it would be void because the defendant was no longer represented.
Bill Gay's folks, his lawyer had said that they were so saddened by this that the one lawyer said that these were scurrilous allegations that should be put to rest. The lawyer for Bill Lummis, who is also being sued, has been named in these actions, said they can't believe this is happening. It's spinning out of control with Melvin Dumar running off to different courts. Are you fighting the same battle with the Lummis folks as well there in Texas?
No, Lummis is still alive.
Okay.
And so he's being represented by counsel. But here is the key. Everyone on the other side, when Bill Gay was alive and after he's gone, and Mr. Lummis, who is currently with us and hopefully will be for a long time, is that we want our chance in court. We are not looking to reopen the Howard Hughes estate. As you said before, George, all that money is gone. What we're doing is we're saying that it was Mr. Lummis and Mr. Gay who orchestrated the fraud that took place in Las Vegas, Nevada, back in 1977 and 78 during that trial, that manipulated the trial, may have manipulated jurors, certainly got involved with threatening witnesses and keeping evidence out of there, out of that trial, that would have proved that Howard Hughes did in fact leave the Desert Inn at the time that Melvin picked him up. So we're suing them for the fraud that they perpetrated 30 years ago, and that's why we're in court. They are frustrated because I won't give up, Ron Greening won't give up, and Melvin Dumar won't give up, because we now know the truth. They don't want the truth to come out. They don't want to go before a jury. And one of the things that we were hoping for here tonight is that if Sonny is still out there, or somebody who knows of Sonny is listening tonight, that all they have to do is get on the internet and go to info@steinlawfirm.com and write me a note and tell me how to reach out to you. And I will get a hold of you. We'll have Gary Magnuson get a hold of you. And we know now what the truth is. And the truth is going to set us free. And we're going to get to the end of this. If ultimately we get back to court, and where everything is now, because you questioned about where things are legally, we're currently at the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. What is pending there is our appeal of the dismissal from the Utah court, because, as you rightly put it, the judge said, go back to Nevada. Well, we went back to Nevada, and they said, go away. They don't want us to do anything. They want us just to fold up our tents and never bother them again.
Somehow I'm not surprised by that, by the way.
Yeah. I think we can pick up what the lawyers are saying from Central Casting out in California as what you say all the time when your clients are sued. And it would be smart of them to come forward and settle this, but that's okay. We're entitled to a trial. And the 10th Circuit now has two things in front of it. Not only the appeal of the dismissal, but they now have a motion to strike all of the briefs filed by Mr. Lummis and Mr. Gay and his children because of that lie that they said to the courts both in Nevada and at the Tenth Circuit that the two sons were the co-executors of the estate. And it was Ron Greening who was able to go to court and present to that judge in Harris County that the statements that they were making to the federal courts were untrue, and that's why the judge found them to be unfit and unsuitable to be the executors, and now there's an independent executor who is ultimately going to take over the case for the Gay family.
You know, there are a lot of strange things that happened all the way along over more than 30 years now. I remember reading about this and talking to Melvin about it, about something that unusual happened in that original probate trial here in Las Vegas where the judge questioned Melvin. Melvin, do you remember that experience?
Well, he questioned me. He just threatened me that if I didn't tell the truth, that I was going to go to the Nevada State Penitentiary.
That's kind of an odd thing, or is that odd thing for a judge to say?
I guess not. There may be odd judges who would say such a thing, but it's clearly an inappropriate thing to say to anyone. That was a threat to a witness where a judge is sitting at a deposition, which is also unusual. And the judge is saying that to Melvin, effectively prejudging the situation, saying, Melvin, I expect you to lie when you open your mouth, and if you do, I'm going to get the attorney general involved. I mean, one of the things that that struck me when I read Gary's book are all of the unusual things that happened surrounding this trial. As an example, the FBI got involved in examining the will. Now, the FBI doesn't normally get involved, and the FBI lab, in anything except criminal matters. And here they are involved in a civil matter with the Howard Hughes organization trying to set aside this will. And there have been all kinds of connections with many people connected with the Howard Hughes organization, with the Nixon administration, with the CIA, with things that may never be known for another 20 or 30 years because of the secrecy acts. And all of a sudden, the FBI is involved. The Attorney General of Nevada, during the trial, is investigating Melvin. And I have to say a good word about Melvin's lawyers who were representing him at this time, who came from Utah. They were doing a yeoman's job here, but they were just overwhelmed by the money and power of not only the Hughes organization, but the state of Nevada, because the Attorney General got involved, as Gary mentioned before. And one of the most interesting things is that the Attorney General went on to be the governor of Nevada, running in 1978, the year the trial ended. But before the trial ended, there was a $25,000 donation to his campaign made by the Hughes organization.
Well, that governor, by the way, only served one term. Gary, I want to ask you a question. We talked a moment ago about the judge and this very tough questioning of Melvin during this probate trial. Now, Melvin is not on trial. He's not accused of any kind of a crime, and the judge is being real tough on him. Didn't you somehow undercover some indication that the judge had some doubts or changed his mind later on?
Yes, he gave a speech, at least one speech, after the trial was over to the Chamber of Commerce, I believe it was, in Las Vegas, and reviewed the trial with those people at a luncheon and mentioned to them that basically he thought that the will was legitimate and that Melvin did not forge it.
Ron, there in Texas, I didn't realize that you had to go to court tomorrow, so I really appreciate you staying up this late with us. Have you looked at that whole record of the probate trial in Las Vegas? Have you studied it as well, along with Stuart?
I have not. Stuart is our expert in that area. And by the way, Stuart, who's over in New Mexico right now, will also appear with me in Harris County Court tomorrow. So he has an early flight over here tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I hope that. Once the show is over, I shower, shave, and go to the airport, George.
Well, I really appreciate it. Paint for me the best scenario, best case scenario, how this proceeds from here.
Well, the best case scenario is going to be that this independent administrator is going to be appointed, is going to stay appointed, as the person who is controlling the gay estate. And that will legitimatize what is going to go on at the 10th Circuit up in Denver. If the best case scenario is that the 10th Circuit will reverse the ruling of the federal district judge in Utah, who I think made an honest mistake of saying that we first had to go back to the probate proceeding in Las Vegas and set aside that judgment. That was the error that he made. And I think it's going to be very simple for the 10th Circuit to reverse that. Upon that reversal, we'll then go back to Salt Lake City and we'll be setting up the necessary discovery to get all of our witnesses in line. And there'll be a trial date, and we'll go before a trial in Utah and Salt Lake City against both the estate of Bill Gay and against Mr. Lummis. And that during that discovery proceeding, we'll be able to find out what they got out of the Hughes estate. And it'll be up to the jury to determine what they got and whether or not the wealth that they have accumulated from that estate should be taken from them and to make Melvin whole for his $156 million that he should have gotten years ago. And so that's why we're looking for more confirmation of what Bob Darrow told us. So we hopefully will find somebody either who knew Sonny, his girl at the Cottontail Ranch, or Sonny herself, to just contact me at info@steinlawfirm.com, and we will follow up and get to the truth.
Have you had a chance, Stuart or Gary, in the course of his investigation, or even Ron, to converse with any of the jurors in the original trial, to sort of go over with them, hey, if you had known what Bob Darrow had to say, would it have changed your mind? Anything along those lines?
Well, one of the things, not to jump in here, but Gary can talk about this as he does in the book, and I have to tell you, the book that he wrote, The Investigation, is one of the finest independent investigations and reporting I have ever read. That's what got me excited about the case. And when he went and spoke with Bob Darrow, he also spoke to the one juror who's left. And one of the things that I did before I agreed to move in court and file this case was to go with Gary and meet all these people. So I went and I sat at Bob Darrow's kitchen, and we spoke about it. He brought out all the papers that he had from the Hughes organization to prove he was Howard Hughes' personal pilot. I sat with the one juror who was working at one of the casinos still up to a few years ago in Las Vegas, and spoke to him about what was going on within the jury room. And ultimately, he signed a affidavit for the case in Utah saying that if he and the jurors knew about Robert Darrow and his testimony, that they would have absolutely voted to admit that will into probate, and Melvin would have gotten his money 30 years ago.
You guys are all still up against some pretty tall odds there in Texas, Ron. I would imagine the Bill Lummis name and the Bill Gay name and their families, their estates are pretty powerful folks with some pretty high-priced lawyers. And I can't imagine that Melvin Dumar is a wealthy man paying the two of you guys. So you're still up against some pretty tough odds, aren't you?
Yes, we certainly are. The Gay family has spared no expense in hiring at least four law firms to represent them. It doesn't matter how big the firms are, which they're all large firms. It matters how smart and how hard working the lawyers are. And so far, we've been successful for Melvin at every turn. We intend to continue that even as soon as tomorrow, and we'll eventually find out what's in the Gay estate and have a representative so that the federal case can proceed. So we will be successful. It's just taking a lot longer than any of us thought it would.
Any attempt by either of these two and other entities, the defendants, to settle something, to make you guys go away?
They know my phone number, and they know Ron's phone number. And, Ron, have you gotten a call?
I haven't. I really haven't.
Neither have I. And, if George, if you get a call, you just refer them to us.
I'll send it to your website. Do you just figure they've got enough money and time, they'll drag this out until you either get tired of it or until they crush you like a bug, huh?
Well, they're never going to crush us like a bug. One thing that Ron Greening and I have in common is that people underestimate us, and they always have throughout our entire careers. I don't stop. Ron doesn't stop. And we're going to go until it finally ends. And the end that I see and the end that Ron sees is that we will be the winners, and we will have full exoneration of all of those bad things they said about Melvin Dumar over the years, and we're going to get him his money.
Melvin, I know money has got to be part of it. It'd be nice. It would make a change in your life, considering the health problems and work problems that you've had. How much of it is money, and how much of it is sort of verification that you're telling the truth?
Well, I think that a lot of the verification is more important than the money is at this point. I mean, you know, it would be nice, but I've never really counted on it. I never asked for anything. I never really expected it to happen. And it would probably be nice if it did, but, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath, that's for sure.
How about
I told Stuart when he got involved, I said the one thing I did tell him, if he remembers or not, I said, this is not going to be a cakewalk for you.
Yeah, I do remember that, and I told him I'm still a good dancer.
And Gary, what about for you? I mean, I guess part of it would be you're not in it for a bunch big pile of money. Is it a verification that you did a good job in your book, or you just want to help Melvin out, or what's driving you in this?
Well, you know, at this point, I'm an advocate, and I was a skeptic to begin with. Now I'm an advocate, and it's only right that Melvin gets what Howard Hughes wanted to give him. That's the point here. And the opponents to the will pulled all the strings they could to deny Melvin what it was due him. And of course, I've been doing this at my own expense. And I at this point in time, I certainly would like to sell some books to recoup my expenses. But I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Well, I'll plug it again. It's called The Investigation by Gary Magnuson. It's a fascinating read. I've got a couple of copies, and you can get it on Amazon.com and various other places. One other question for you, Gary, and then we're going to take a short break and then open up the phones. The mention a couple of minutes ago by Stuart about the FBI getting involved in the probate trial here in Las Vegas. You were an FBI guy for a long time. Did you ever ask anybody, hey, what's the deal on this?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I reviewed some material through the Freedom of Information Act that was obtained. And the question that was posed to the FBI, first of all, the Attorney General of Nevada pressed very, very hard. Called the director and put a lot of pressure on the Bureau to get involved in this thing, particularly the laboratory. And the question that the Bureau had was, normally they don't get involved in civil matters, but since this is such a high-profile case, since this case involves Howard Hughes, the richest man in America, and since this case has such widespread appeal, should we get involved for that reason? And there was a debate back at the Bureau. And those that thought that they should get involved prevailed, and that's why they got involved. But it's very, very unusual.
I would have to agree. All right, we'll be back with your questions for our group here. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.